everyone. Welcome to another episode of Art and Labor. We are the podcast on the ongoing struggle to survive as an art and or cultural worker. I'm OK Fox.
And I'm Lucia Love. And we have controversy for you listeners today. Two different kinds of controversy.
Yeah, I feel like I haven't said the tagline of the show in the while in a while, because I think, like, you know, the struggle to survive has just been a very palpable given.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, who knew that we would have such applicable subjects as surviving in and being who we are?
Oh, God. It just feels, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. It's just very present, not just for rando weirdos like us, but everybody now.
Yeah, it's getting spicy out there. But one thing is for sure, that amongst all of the dissolution of the social systems we used to rely on and believe would, you know, make up some sort of a thing called like a government, you know, all this stuff, it's going by the wayside. But what is not going by the wayside is art fights.
Art world fights. That's the big topic of the day. We've been following some threads in several different art industries or art worlds or art scenes or however you want to call it.
Yeah, if you're making something, we're paying attention to it. Did you make a poopy today? Did you put some googly eyes on it? Well, now we're looking.
come on. That's it. Sorry. I'm just very derailed by that image. But and also I'm derailed by the Twitter fight currently going on in my mentions right now.
Amazing.
And that has been going on for the past 24 hours. Which is stuff we've talked about. Longtime listeners of the podcast will remember our episodes where I talked about the Festival Workers Association, which is a group me and some comrades of mine. Some were friends, some were just like, some are people I still have never met to this day.
I love the internet for that.
Who I think are friends, of course, anyway, but you know, a group of us started to try to get like comics and zine fairs to be as equitable as possible. Even though it like it's extremely small potatoes, it's like people, you know, a lot of folks, you know, plan their entire years around these conventions that, of course. Yeah.
Here's the thing.
It can no longer happen
it's
anymore.
It's not small potatoes. I mean, or maybe it is, but there's a lot of them. It's a really
a
big,
lot of those
very big pile of small potatoes that we're talking about.
Right. And I'm someone who's founded zine fairs in the past with the explicit goal in mind to get artists paid instead of like being operating on a loss, which some people can operate on a loss and it's fine and they are just like really good at their taxes or whatever, but I don't know, a lot of people I know, it's like it can be really devastating to have a bad convention, and like people tend to blame that on like individual responsibility or whatever, like, oh, you didn't survive in the marketplace of ideas or whatever the fuck. But like, I as somebody who is always chasing after this like idea of what is liberatory art, what it you know, what it, how do we actually achieve that, it always seemed to me that like zines and the small press community is like a way for us to try to create alternative models on a scale we can actually manage. Mm-hmm. And so I'm
zines. Utopia.
Maybe that's very utopian.
Naive. Everybody's problems.
I'm not trying.
Do you want to make a sculpture? Well, have you thought about making a zine shaped sculpture?
No, of course it's not. Of course, it's not a one size fits all artist solution to free art. At all of, but it's just like, I don't know.
It's something that people enjoy. I mean, honestly, it's just like, look, there's always going to be somebody who wants to make the new monument that's going to replace the horrible racist monument, you know? And for them, making a zine is not going to fix that hole in them that wants to make a monument. So, like,
right.
It is what it is.
But you can make a zine about the monument you want to make. I don't know.
Yeah. Of course. There's always a way to fit zines into whatever you're doing. Like, are you a cook? Well, you can make a zine about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's pamphlets. It's small multiples. A lot of my sculpturally minded friends, like would used to like table zine fairs with me and just make a bunch of like funny little sculptures and stuff.
Nice.
Like that's cool too. I love all that stuff.
Yeah. It's fun. It's fun to do with friends. And a lot of people used to be able to get together and do it, but now not so much.
It's been difficult for me to not have this community, honestly, but
yeah,
and it's and it's weird having these conversations I've always tried to have, and to you know, these like to these meaning like, how do we make them more ethical, how do we get more transparency, and it feels right now people are like having those conversations, like being really transparent. Like, so Lightbox is a group that I really like. They kind of came out of the Freelance Solidarity Project.
Hmm.
Who we've talked to on this show, and they're a group of like illustrators and comics industry people who are publishing rates, like anonymously sharing rates and then publishing them. And so they did a comic about some of their findings, and it got a lot of controversy because people became very confused about like which part of the industry they're actually talking about, because it seemed like it, like, because like they were like, our lowest advance for a book was $6,000, and people are like, that's actually really high.
Damn.
like they're like, shouldn't the lowest rate be zero, because that happens all the time. And it's like, my initial take is like, well, if they don't have all the information, it's people should reach out and get involved and figure that out. But then I realize, like, yeah, there is this rift in the comics world, which I'm not really an expert on, to be honest, because I'm just a weirdo like zines. But you know, I do study this stuff, so what I've recognized it as is like, yeah, there's this indie comics world, and then there's the commercial illustration world, and people get confused about where the line is, which is understandable, because in recent years, as we talked about on this show, a lot of these conventions that are like, say, Small Press Expo, TCAF, Toronto Comics Arts Festival, these ostensibly are independent press expos, but have been becoming more commercialized over time, kind of slowly, kind of abruptly, depending on how you look at it. Amazon sponsorships come and go with criticism. Kickstarter gets involved. Kickstarter is pretty embedded into small press at this point, like, because that's how a lot of this stuff gets funded, is crowdfunding. But
yeah,
it's sticky. It's a sticky
makes
web.
Sense as like a people. It people thought they could use it symbiotically, but
right
now they're right. not happy with the outcome of like. Oh, we can't just use your platform. You also want to have a stake in our community. Fuck.
Yeah, it's and to be fair, like these tech outlets start off more like as you know maybe independent, then get bought out. By I forget which one Kickstarter is owned by. It's not Amazon. Is it Amazon? I don't fucking remember. We've talked about that on the show before. Yeah.
It's safe to say Amazon has really cornered most everything except for the people who boycott being a part of their platform.
It is a sticky thing, and it's and then I think about this stuff sometimes as like, well, it's like it's weird because like these like art shouldn't be a market. It's just the situation that so many of us have found ourselves in, and how and so then I get these I'm getting into it with the owner of Desert Island Comics in my mentions,
which is great because there's like a long brewing rivalrous relationship there.
I'm a nobody.
But you can't say that. You're a podcaster.
I'm media.
Yeah, you're a media person.
I'm media.
And so now we're going to drag media. That Desert Island bastard oh, through the mud no. right God. This minute.
I'm really not trying to I'm not trying to do cancel culture I'm not trying to do it.
No, we're here in critic culture.
Yes.
There's a difference.
Yes, Marone. I'm doing like an Italian hand gesture.
Hey, Marone. We do the critique. Hey, I forget about you. You cancel. I cancel, nice. You cancel.
Nice criticism. Oh, we canceled for anti-Italian racism.
Mm-hmm. I have an Italian. I'm like, it's okay. My name's right. Lucia. Jeez. It's fine.
We've done this before.
Yeah. It's okay, guys. Let us do it. Just
shh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's how we just distract. We're like, what? Who's Desert Island? We don't know. What are you talking about? We're not canceling nothing. Anyway, this fucking guy up in the mentions.
Look, I'm for the petition changing Columbus to Guy Fieri Town or whatever.
Oh, I know. Flavor Town.
Flavor Town, yeah.
Yeah. Dude, absolutely.
I support Italian culture.
Thank you.
The non-fascist or colonial type.
Even the fascism, you know, it was a little bit lighter. It was a little bit easier going than the German kind, you know.
If we're splitting hairs, but yeah, I've lost track of where the conversation is, like literally right now, because it's currently happening. So I'm sorry if I sound a little like distracted because I'm looking over what I said in 20 hours ago, but
well, what was like, how did this whole thing start? Like what
oh well, through the Lightbox comic, which is like, it's good that all this conversation has popped off from Lightbox, because that's like the whole point, is to like publish rates, like, you know, everybody is talking amongst ourselves, like how much we make, how much, like, you know, how much people get from the publishing industry, from these deals or whatever. It's like radical transparency or whatever. That's how it works.
Yeah.
And then everybody talks about it debates it. And I think that's really good. It's just weird when, because these things are all sort of getting conflated. So like the conversation like gets confused when people are like, I don't know. Gabe, the owner of Desert Island, is definitely like confusing his personal art practice with his business that he runs, selling other people's artwork.
I saw the tweet, I think, that he posted, or he was like, oh, I just want you to know that I haven't made a dime off of the art that I produce.
Right. And so then I was like, if you're looking for criticism of small press, we made Festival Workers because many of us that couldn't even afford a $100 table fee were frustrated by the lack of transparency of festival organizers who often pretend they are as broke as the artists they profit off of. And then I get the Desert Island financials breakdown from Gabe, which is like something that we had, you know, been pressuring for, you know, back when this was relevant. Like, relevant just meaning like before COVID, because he also included like his current income, which is of course nothing,
right.
And he said this thing where he was like, just talking about my personal art practice here, if I waited for someone to pay me, I would never make anything, but would rather make art when able. As far as the shop is concerned, we have done as much as possible with very low income for a long time. Here's some real figures. Which is like, yeah, I wish you gave us these figures before a huge economic collapse. Because like my whole point with like, with talking about the festival he runs, which is Comics Arts Brooklyn, which used to be Brooklyn Comics and Graphics, which like who really knows why that original rift happened. But I think this is like a community that a lot of people care about, and his store like could be more collectivized if he wanted to relinquish some of that control. Like he could still be, you know, living like it's, things could be more equitable for everybody, not just him. Because like, you know, he, based on these figures he's saying, he's like, he lives a pretty like similar modest lifestyle to a lot of like people I know. But a lot of people are have to live that way and have a terrible shitty day job at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
And it's cool that he can just run the store that like really is a community center that should I think be like a worker cooperative. That could be more, that could have more like democratic input from the like from the artists who really make it what it is. I don't know. That's always like how I've felt about it. I think that Desert Island is an important store. I just think if it was run more collectively, it would be more successful actually. And it would just be healthier for everybody also.
What would that look like?
I don't know. I think a worker cooperative model would be good. I think any model that actively,
like a worker cooperative model with all of the people who have zines there?
Well, for all the employees too, because there are employees at the store.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It could look like blue stockings, right? It could look like a thing where you know, maybe a small handful of employees are the actual owners, and then it is this more like volunteer run venture, but then, like, you know, with Blue Stockings, they don't actually make money on people's zines. That just goes to the zine makers, because it's small, it's that small. That's like the division line. Like, they do make money on books.
Right.
And Desert Island is similar. I think they take half or something for zines.
Oh, I thought that they like buy buy stuff wholesale from people.
They will. They will. And I think that's good too. But I don't know. I don't really know that much about small businesses. I have a complicated relationship with small businesses. Like, I've done the thing where I work under minimum wage for a small business I really care about, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think it's right, but I also want these things to survive. I'm not quite sure what to do with them. I do think festivals could be more democratic run, instead of just being a thing for one organizer to make money off of, or if it's a thing where the festival is keeping Desert Island afloat. I think just saying that is like would be enough for a lot of people to understand, like, okay, this has like a high table fee, but it's going into this store, which I could like sell my books to afterwards if I don't do well or something, you know? Like, I don't know.
Right.
It feels insane, because I even said this. I'm like, I totally agree with the sentiment of including post-COVID income, because like, a lot of this is like totally moot, like in COVID world, like, you know?
Yeah.
So it feels kind of nuts to even like.
Yeah, exactly. It's like arguing about what everybody should have done in their past life.
Right. It's like, other folks have gotten more, even deeper criticism about it. This person, Reynard Faux, who is like an actual like cultural critic, like comics critic, is talking about it, like, has a deeper thread about how it relates to like racism in indie comics, and I think that's worth a read. I'll post it in the show notes.
Nice.
I don't know. My big point was, like, basically, like, if these things are going to be remade, like, if there is like a post-COVID future and the stuff is remade and we have a chance to remake it, like, maybe this could be like the start to those conversations. You know, instead of like remaking the sort of like, well, you gotta, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and pay your dues and do all the things and jump all the hoops and pay $1 million to go to school. You know, why don't we not do that next time?
Yeah. Oh, God, please. As we remake the world, how about we do it without, like, the debt structure?
Right. I mean, like, I guess, like, that to me is worth, is worth having this conversation. And, like, as much as, like, in the COVID economy, there are going to be a lot of people who are making art for money. Like, animation is going to be huge, like, with like a lot of Hollywood, I think. if it's not safe to have big sets. If these still have to be markets, then at least we should, the workers of in the, within stuck within those markets should have a voice, you know. That's like another thing I think that needs to be considered, that like, you know, maybe the indie comics scene can't exist without conventions, but a lot of other commercial art shit is still going to be active for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it never ends. Never ends. None of it ever does. It's wild.
Yeah, it's like it just keeps repeating itself, the logic of the market or whatever.
Yeah.
It sucks.
It's its own thing, you know.
Oh, it's almost like it's the system that's the problem.
Yeah, look, we're just gonna end it and we're gonna just do something else. It's gonna be great.
which is why I like to frame this stuff back towards a larger conversation about capitalism and socialism and but again, I don't have all the fucking answers. We all need to fucking get together and figure this shit out.
No, of course. I mean, unfortunately, we live in a culture that, you know, everyone is not going to see problems in. It's like, oh, you only see a problem if there is a problem for you.
Or you're like Chuck Woolery, where you're like, this COVID stuff's not real. On Twitter 24/7. And then his sons get COVID and he's like, my son's got COVID. And then he deletes his Twitter.
Right. That's great.
Insane.
Yeah. Just like brains melting in real time is always fun.
Yeah. And it's interesting, like seeing people who like, we're all kind of in the same boat now. It's very interesting.
No, you said it. We're all in the same boat, except for the people who are in yachts.
Right. Okay, I was talking a little bit about this on, like, just amongst friends, just privately, but, like, it's interesting because it's like, yeah, this is all small potatoes, like we were saying before. Mm. But what about the stuff that does touch? Like, it's like, a lot of, like I'm like thinking about like there's like some really evil money in the arts, like, and we can't just ignore like the fucking Wexner Art Center or like, you know, all the shit with that we went through with the Whitney and all these things, you know. It's a weird balance.
Yeah, totally. I don't know either. I don't even try to know.
But what's okay, so the other thing was the painting world.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I want to know more about the context of this piece you had me read.
Oh, boy. Okay. Everybody buckle up and get ready for some bullshit. Pew, pew, pew. This is the backdrop of our culture, and it does not slap. Yeah, so, okay, I'll see if I can set this up in a way to highlight for anybody who hasn't been following this, like, whole thing, why this is a really intense development in art criticism, and try to help highlight, like, how it ties in to, culture at large. So there is a piece that came out last week, and it's in Art News. The title is First There Was Zombie Formalism, Now There's Zombie Figuration, by Alex Greenberger. This piece is playing off of this concept of like you know, this zombie formalism, which was zombie abstraction also, that was a few years ago. There were a bunch of abstract painters who were being picked up by the market and basically like blatantly, openly used for, you know, for trafficking money by the people that you're mentioning. These, you know, it's just like
the Les Wexners of the world.
Yeah, exactly. And then as a result, these artists who were gaining prominence through their relationship to all of this capital infusion, they were sort of changing the tide of like the art that everyone was making in art school, in galleries. You know, like this kind of stuff has a really long-lasting ripple effect to the efforts that people will put out in like hopes that they will then be able to achieve the same status of wealth. Right. And there is some kind of like, I mean, not, or, you know, whether it be wealth of like
social capital.
Yeah, exactly. It's like there's a lot of trying to be a part of things. There's also a lot of just like, oh, if, you know, if one product is not available, but you have a product that's similar to it, it might get purchased. So you may as well play the speculation game. So now this, you know, this trend has pretty much died down a lot. And some of the artists who were wrapped up in zombie abstraction, like actually opened up their careers and had some interesting projects outside of that painting movement that sort of redeemed them. Like, I don't know, they're like Oscar Murillo had a really big position in this really kind of blasphemous experience, but he used his position to talk about capitalism by making like a chocolate factory in a Zwerner gallery where, you know, it was like, oh, we're pumping out all of this chocolate for people, and it's sort of like a multiple product that you can, like, visitors can come in and they can get them, but then when you look into the space, it's literally like his friends and his family from like his home, and they're like making chocolates in a fucking factory. And he's like, will you look at this? People are actually making this. Right. Can you look at this? And so it was sort of this, like, I don't know. I thought it was a good way to stop hiding from metaphor.
Yeah. And it's making the people who go to Zwerner look at something.
Yes, like- exactly. Because it's like, you can talk about it with your friends all you want, but it's like, if he is directly addressing the people who are responsible for this factory setup, it's like that. Right. I just feel like that was a redeeming.
Yeah. Can I just say, like relational aesthetics has always like pissed me off, because I'm just like, yeah, okay, there's a fucking taco truck in the new museum. I like, you know, I've worked in a food truck. It sucks. Like, I don't know. Like, what's the point?
No, I completely agree. There's a lot of issues.
It's not for me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's for people who are like, oh my God, I've never seen this.
It's crazy.
Oh my God. People make this stuff? What? But so, okay. That's a little background. Everyone had an issue with kind of like the extreme stripping of content that was going on in art, that was just like, oh, now these are total placeholders for money. This is ridiculous.
Right.
But so along comes this article that is saying, like, first there was zombie formalism, now there's zombie figuration. And this, and like, I don't know, maybe we could go through a little bit of it, but basically, there is this sort of tone to the whole piece that is like, oh, surrealism is done. It like ran its course and now it's not having any effect on people, which is very bizarre, because I think, to equate these two movements is it's like you're like when you look at all of these surrealists that get mentioned in the work in this piece, it's like they're from all different economic backgrounds, first of all, and some of them are just like modestly building their careers, you know, up to a point where they're sustainable over like decades.
Yeah.
Versus the zombie abstraction, which was like overnight flooding money into work that very isn't different, like conceived properly of. So I'm like, okay.
Like figuration to me just feels more fundamental to painting also than I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but.
Well, I mean, it's like, you know, here's the thing that always ends up happening in the art world. There are trends, and the kind of rule of thumb that everybody says is like, oh, well, wait for 7 years. And, you know, if you have a career at the start of 7 years, if you have a career by the end of 7 years, it'll be over because of the people who want to manufacture trends. So now there's this thing happening where it's like, oh, you've all been painting figures for too long, and now we're saying that they're dead again. And you see all of these dead figures that you're trying to use, you're trying to bring them back to life for some reason, but it's just not going to work. Sure, maybe they're good artists, but you're not moving anything forward. Oh yeah, here's a direct quote. Let's be clear. Most of the practitioners of zombie figuration are good artists. Their work is simply no longer moving things forward. Like what moving what forward?
No, I don't understand. That's what I was going to say initially was like, I don't understand the like the editorial position the writer's taking. And I especially don't understand the ending. It just feels extremely abrupt.
Yeah.
I think that's the point. The ending is normally the point where you put the like, so what? Like I don't think they're saying much.
Well, the thing is they're trying to infer something.
Yeah,
about
there's gotta be context that I don't quite understand. Yeah.
Choices are. Which right. also is it's complicated because if you look at the political underpinnings of the reasons why we've been making images the way we are, it starts to get interesting. So This critic talks a little bit about Matthew Maloof, who made a painting called Eruption. And it's like, okay, so let's see. Like, so he makes this painting, for example, Eddie Van Halen shredding on a guitar whose neck also happens to be an ejaculating penis. And then you look at the painting and it's like, this painting rules. It's funny. It's really, really funny. It made me happy to look at it.
Yeah.
And the thing about it was also like, this is a feminist statement. And now once you start looking at how many artists this article picks up that are making feminist statements, this critic is basically starting to go, oh, well, maybe feminism is out because now we're doing black portraiture. Because they're like, oh, well, you see this show that's up at the New Museum, it's going great. You know, I mean, of course, like there's this Peter Saul is going on, but Peter Saul, I mean, too much. Too obvious, too blatant. But then Jordan Castile, let me just say how much I love Jordan Castile. And it's like you can say that you love Jordan Castile as a portraitist and be like totally correct and like me too. Great paintings, wonderful paintings, good subject matter, like something that we're trying to do in figuration is open up these spaces for different voices to record their visual histories and to like start opening up ways of going like we have a nobility of our own and this is what it looks like. And like, because oil painting has always been used as this sort of like ledger of history where you connect to a tradition. So connecting other voices to a tradition, like, you know, through this sort of postmodern.
It's cool.
It's nice. And it makes people happy to see something that just like reflects a different point of view that, that may be closer to what they share. And of course, there's so many issues behind everything, but like the expansion of people's voices is not one of them. Like, that's a nice thing that just is, it's just fun and good, like, to see something else. So to be like, oh, well, we can expand voices, but only to one identity group, like, at a time. Because we saw all of these women, like, painting about, like, the politics of sexuality. And then we saw all of, you know, it wasn't all women. It was like they talked about Sam McInnes, too, who is, like, you know, part of the queer community, whatever. And it's just like, oh, yeah, queer people, women talking about sexual politics. I don't know if this is pushing things forward anymore. But you know what is pushing things forward? Is just like when people of color paint portraits that are very straightforward. That's actually pushing things forward. And it's like, homie, what is things and what is forward?
Yeah, that sounds like the fucking diversity capitalism bullshit that like we talked about last episode, where it's just like it's weird. It's like it's very it shouldn't have to be a one or the other thing, and it's strange to like tie like a an art process, like, or it's not even a process, like it's a market that they're making up as they go.
Yeah.
And being like, here's the winner of the market right now. Like, it's just creating like a new I don't know, it's almost fetishistic. I don't like that.
Well, it completely is. And this is why I wanted to bring out this specific article, because like when you read it, you start to see the way that the mechanism of criticism works, like without any of the gloss, because this writer is so blatant. But then when you look at this, then you can start to see it everywhere, like the way that taste will affect people's livelihoods, where it's like, sure, some of the artists you're talking about are doing really well. But then if you go around and you wage a war against the things that they're putting out there, saying like, oh, well, they just don't deserve any of the attention that they're getting. They, you know, they actually are doing a disservice to art by not like conceptually somehow broadening the horizons. And they start to try to like bring, you know, like,
well, it's also when these like white artists try to conceptually broaden the horizon, it doesn't end well. Like, you know, if you look at like the Dana Schultz controversy.
That's one example of a thing that didn't work out. But then there are also artists who are working on describing their own experiences. Like, I just think.
Totally. And I think that's more appropriate.
It's not like, oh, white artists can't broaden. You know what I mean? Like,
no, I don't think they're incapable. It just feels like it's difficult for some people to do it because they come from a wealthier background. And they don't really like they're being like, there's no reason to pressure like wealthier white people to try. Like, I don't know. It just feels like that's like not the way to do it.
No, absolutely. But the thing about art is also like, there's all this discourse going on around, you know, all kinds of aesthetics that art encapsulates. So to say that art should be pushed in one direction or another, depending on your politics, is also a false statement.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like the battle of agendas that go on in the critical sphere are basically just there to like reorganize social structures.
Yeah, and it's harmful social, fundamentally harmful social structures.
Yeah, and then it just ends up being kind of like this detractor from the real issue, which was something that did get discussed in Zombie Abstraction, which is that the root of this trouble that we're going through is the is the capitalism. Yes. It's the exploitation of all of these creatives who like are struggling just to not, I mean, not, you know, obviously painters in a lot of cases are not struggling in the way that people who are making zines are because they're already working with more material. They're working
with different
structures.
But that's a way to
structures.
Do it without fetishizing a struggle that is not yours. And like recognizing that, like, the, you know, it's like the zombie part of the of zombie figuration and zombie formalism. Like, that's the capitalism is this, that zombie. I don't know.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, and that was the main thing. It was like, if you are going to make a criticism about art, it should be something like, why? I mean, I don't know. Should, whatever. I'm going to scratch that immediately. But
it's hard. Don't worry.
But how about this? What if it was like, oh, we're seeing all of these market trends driven by purchasing power of a few elites, and it makes it incredibly hard for the majority of us to actually get a say as to how we would like figuration to be expressed.
Yeah.
And here are a few examples of the ways that, like, that people who are collectors in the collector class have fundamentally like changed the course of how our art is produced based on their own tastes that are then reinforced by articles like this.
But then who would write the checks at Art News, Lucia?
Oh, you're right. Oh no. Oh my gosh, you're right. Yeah, those sweet, like, what do you think? Is it a $50 article?
Well, I think for someone like this critic, they probably get paid a lot more because they've been there for a while, but...
Yeah, oh, who knows? I just think, you know, of course this is...
I know art form is $50.
Yeah, usually it's like I've been paid $50 to write things. The most I've ever been paid is $200. Mm-hmm. I think, for a publication. But yeah, it's just, it's like, it's pretty small potatoes to be doing the bidding of the market.
Seriously.
Talk about small potatoes now.
It's true. It's two different, like, it's great. This is like a very synthesizing mm-hmm. episode. Because it really is just like these topics we cover, it's like these places, this place is where we're all fighting for scraps.
Yeah. Yeah. Because of course it's like, you know, I'm fighting for a world where we can make zines and we can make paintings and there's not really a problem. You know, it's not like, oh, well you just do this.
Right.
Oh, well that's just that. It's like that's not the issue. That's not the fight. And one thing is not more elevated than another thing. It's just that some areas of markets get left in the dust until people think that it's like profitable, which also happens with figuration. Like when abstraction was at its height, it was absolutely like, it was so hard to get a show for a figurative painter. You know what I mean? Like, and that's the other thing. It's like, oh, so what do you think? Now we've just had enough. Like, you guys get to have careers for...
You guys get to suck the titty, and now it's my turn.
Yeah, exactly. Now I think, actually, critics should be artists, and you should just pay me.
Guys, there's multiple titties.
Yes, there is.
That's not the point. That's of course not the point.
There is a lot of titties though.
Let's especially make more figuration. Titties. Let's grow titties.
We're making titties out there. Mm-hmm. And that's it. That's what we got for y'all.
Figured it out.
The synthesis. Yeah. We're mad Hegelian.
I'm like so like I'm just trying. I'm trying to be to understand this stuff better. I really am. Because I do feel like I'm dipping into like philosophy stuff and I still don't quite have a grasp on it. And I feel really self-conscious about it.
Well, I think, you know, it's kind of like you just get it from exposure. And yeah. I think a lot of people feel that self-consciousness and then they don't follow up on whatever they're trying to learn because it's like, oh, that's what a painful feeling. I don't like being out of my element.
It's weird out there. It's like, oh.
Yeah. I mean, that's why we have but each group, other, though. Yeah. It's like.
The group and like the recordings from the group, even. Oh, yeah. So helpful.
Oh, have you been listening to recordings from Constructing the Real?
Yeah. That's like helpful to me, even just putting it on, like, yeah, while I'm cooking. Like,
yeah. Podcast. Oh yeah, that's would it make sense? Maybe it'd be cool to drop one of those conversations in the feed. Here.
Yeah, totally can do.
Yeah.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, that's been fun though.
Great, here's the segment of the show where we update folks on Constructing the Real.
Oh damn, homies, Constructing the Real, it's coming along. So we're about to have our first visiting lecturer. Her name is Karina Kirch. She is working on a doctorate, a dissertation. I really don't know what the official terms for smart writing is, but she's working on this body of writing that is about how minimalist art got kind of like absorbed into interior design, kind of multiple mass produced objects, and how that kind of like trajectory made it into a capitalist synthesis, and the ways that like Andy Warhol effectually like helped bridge those concepts and make it more palatable. So she's like, she's gonna talk to us about how, yeah, it's like in all the angles of how art becomes public, but then also becomes capitalized upon.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we did a whole episode about Andy Warhol on this show.
We sure did. We did a walking tour of his retrospective. So yeah, I think it should be pretty interesting because, you know, I've never set up a visiting lecture before, but that'll be our next meeting. And of course, we'll record it for everybody. It's cool, and we're making our way through Art and Bear Life, and talking about other courses that we can record for each other and sort of like build out, Yeah, trying to think if there's anything else. That's it for now. We're trucking along.
That's awesome. I think I'm going to do the first test stream for business and free time.
Woo!
Tomorrow. But I'm not like like pushing it anywhere because it's just going to be like a test.
Yeah, you got to see how Twitch works because it seems like it kicks people off in weird timing. Like,
it's a strange, especially. I don't have the best computer for streaming, so I just have to figure out what's a manageable amount that I can stream,
right,
without it getting too bogged down. And just seeing how it all works. But
are you gonna have guests, special guest stars? Well,
it's definitely Tom Whalen, who is just a wonderful person who has made little bonus segments for this show on our Patreon. What Business and Free Time is based off of. But it's more like a zone to hang out and watch stuff, like, and talk, and hopefully, like, in my vision for it is to have like a zone where people can call in easily, and we could all just talk.
Hell yeah. It's going to be like Tim Heidecker's Office Hours.
Yeah, it's going to be like Office Hours.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a call-in show. I think it'll be something in between that and just catching up with people that you're not allowed to see anymore because it's illegal. But.
Yeah.
Like literally, like Tom's in Canada. So.
Oh, geez. Yeah, don't go over there.
Well, they don't want us. Yeah. They don't blame it.
Yeah, we're dirty. It's okay.
Because cool. Yeah, we all miss zine fairs. We all miss meeting in large groups and going to concerts and things like that.
Yeah, but you don't have to miss it anymore because now we have Twitch.
Twitch, which is like recruiting children to join the army.
Oh, yeah. Well,
nightmare.
So is everything online.
It really is. It really does funnel down to like you either fall into someone hands you the Communist Manifesto or a recruiter gets to you.
It's true.
It's brutal.
Yeah, the tweets from the army are so bad.
They did the ooh face.
Oh, I hate them so much.
It's really bad.
Yeah, they're like, hey, we're internet-y. See? You can trust us. Well, come die. Like,
I'm referencing there's a big thing about the army esports team and how they have been recruiting kids as young as like 11 or 13.
Yeah, that's how you got to get them. It's like, somewhere, you know, they talk to you all the way through high school, and then because that's like prime age, you know, they want you at a time they can mold your brain.
It's awful. It's just awful. I hated reading it, but it's awful.
It's really awful.
The internet is fucking all we have, and also awful.
It's not all we have, actually.
Of course it's not. It just feels to do a lot of the conversations we used to be able to do.
I know.
But, you know, I'm still going to the fucking park and seeing my friend at the park safely as I can. Okay? I have to.
Everyone respects you for doing what you need to do. And you're all right.
I just can't.
But you're doing good. You're like, I mean, you're a park addict, but it's okay. You're really managing it.
It's, you know, everyone wear masks, everyone stay far away if you have to take off your mask.
Yeah, hey, everybody, don't be a dum-dum out there if you can help it. You know, keep your boogers in your nose.
But it's like, you know, I just go, it's, you know, being isolated is really fucked up. It's torture.
It is. Yeah. Don't
get isolated. You can actually, you know, I mean, you know your own health, but I would say, of course, if you have an immunocompromised system, like, you know you're supposed to take care of yourself, and you probably have built your life around that fact. So this does not apply. And I apologize for the extra struggle that is involved in living that way. I mean, I feel empathy.
It's like the old folks who, like, you know, people have to, like, visit through glass. Like, you have to visit them. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You can't not. At least do it through glass.
At least Zoom. Well,
people don't. Or at least a phone call, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, nobody, it's like you can't just go, like, hey, can we borrow your little visiting quarters in the jail where we can talk through glass? It's like, no, everyone doesn't have access to a bunch of glass, but you can Zoom with people.
You know, it's just, it's really, yeah, it's difficult.
Yeah. But otherwise, you know, go outside.
You have to go outside. You can't not go outside. You have to go in the sun. You have to sit in the grass. You just have to.
Yeah, just for a minute. And, you know, if someone comes near you, just scream. That's how you do it. Scream inside your mask. Thank you.
Do not take off your mask to scream. You should not be doing that. That's really not good.
Yeah, do not take off your mask. Do not pass go.
Everything has a level of risk.
Please collect 200 scream.
Getting shit delivered to your house has a risk.
Yes, it does. Hey, the air is lava.
Careful. Mm-hmm. All right. That was good. Good up. Loved
good
it.
Up.
Good up. Good up. Loved it.
Art fights. They're still going on. Art fights in the age still, of COVID.
We were fighting for crumbs before. We're fighting for crumbs now. Nothing's changed.
Nope.
Let's fight for crumbs organized. Let's all come together, be a cake.
Let's organize for crumbs.
Let's get a cake. I want a cake.
I want a cake too.
I want a really fucking nice deck chair on the Titanic.
Yeah, one that I built with my friends.
I want one I built with my friends. I want it to be really comfortable. I want to be able to sleep in it.
I want a nice deck chair that's like a lazy boy. And you can put your feet up. Yes. And my friends and I, we made it together and we all sit in it because it's actually like a big love seat recliner, but it's like donut shaped so we can all look at each other. Wait, and hang out.
The deck chair is so big, it's also a flotation device that saves us.
Yes.
What?
Yeah. What about that?
What?
We just figured it out, guys. That's full communism.
We fucking did it.
Yeah. Through collaborative effort. Boom.
Oh my god.
And that's why you have to talk to your friends and you have to go to the park because it keeps your brain thinking of donut solutions.
Holy shit. All right. Having fun. Let's do it.
Let's have fun.
Let's have fun on this life raft chair, deck chair.
Woo! Welcome to the donut pod. If you have an aeroplane that can fly the world and we can have a fantasy, it doesn't really matter if you drive a limousine. It really doesn't matter if you drive for galaxy. I really don't care if you just drive a truck. I don't care if you just drive a limousine. It doesn't really matter if you drive a Ferrari. Just love your company. Let's have fun. 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 Lots of fun. Let's have fun. Let's have fun.